This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
The Green Planet Monitor. Smart solutions for a developing world. In today's edition, empowered communities are planning for their future, and women and youth are at the vanguard.
In indigenous Nassau communities of southwestern Colombia, women and youth are key players in the revitalization of traditional culture and governance. Not far north, in the Central American nation of El Salvador, youth are creating jobs for themselves in ecotourism, drawing upon their rainforest and the relics of the 1980s Civil War. The Nassau indigenous people of southwestern Caucau province in Colombia have been struggling peacefully for years to stay on their ancestral lands, confronted by powerful landowners, the Colombian army, and rebels. In the course of their struggles, women and youth have emerged as natural leaders. GPM producer Jen Moore fills us in.
Muy buenas tardes para todos. Buenas tardes.
Calling people to attention for the ceremony about to begin, the announcer jokes. But as Nassau people, we're always late, but at least we're well organized. The newly elected Traditional Indigenous Council of Santander de Quilichao is about to be inaugurated. There are 17 such councils across Colombia's northern Cauca province, united under the ASIN, the Association of Indigenous Councils from Northern Cauca. Young and old have gathered from Santander and the surrounding towns and villages. Although preparations have delayed this ceremony by a couple of hours, people don't seem to mind. It's sunny out, and spirits are high. The community is situated in a wooded enclave on the edge of the city, cooled by a gentle breeze wafting through the open walls. A little girl in a peach dress twirls around the center wooden post, enjoying the way that her light chiffon layers lift, and anticipating the party that will follow. The annual transfer of power for the traditional indigenous councils here is both a solemn occasion and a celebration. The room is packed, standing room only. Two young people, a woman and a man, step forward as MCs. The young woman begins reading the day's agenda, which includes cultural performances and speeches. 13 new councillors will be inaugurated today, 7 women and 6 men. A few of them are youth. They'll represent the Nassau people of Santander de Quilichao for the coming year, the third of 17 indigenous councils across the area this year to elect a female governor. A leader from the Association of Indigenous Councils greets the audience in their language, Nassau Ojibwe. Women, she says, are as capable of leading as men and are overcoming discrimination within their organization and their communities.
Yo fui gobernadora y siendo gobernadora veía mucha situación con las mujeres, ¿no?
Anatulia Zapata has been part of the Nassau indigenous movement since it emerged in northern Cauca in the early 1970s.
Mucha injusticia contra las mujeres y todo eso.
Anatulia first became involved in women's issues in the late 80s, when she was governor of her local council. As governor, she tells me, she saw a lot of injustice in the homes, and so she worked closely with women.
Por falta de concientizarnos y de prepararnos, pues estamos muy invisibles.
It wasn't that women weren't participating or were absent from the indigenous struggles. No, they were there, she says, working alongside the men, but they weren't being recognized, and they weren't even recognizing themselves. Anatulia wasn't the only one fighting for women's rights. In 1993, a group of Nassau women proposed that the regional organization create a women's program. Soon after, Anatulia was named coordinator. Their first steps were straightforward, says Anatulia. First they needed as women to understand what they do and don't do. to recognize what they know and don't know. They needed to understand the injustices taking place in order to propose alternatives. The women's program sparked the creation of family councils across northern Cauca province. Now they're exploring their traditional legal system to determine how best to treat cases of abuse, which are being more regularly denounced.
Buenas tardes.
As more people bring their greetings to the assembly, several men also acknowledge the importance of women leaders. One young man surprises the audience with a boisterous good afternoon. He says he's particularly happy that women are earning their space. But it hasn't always been this way, says Anatulia. The women's program has faced a lot of resistance. They've dealt with this by emphasizing that women's involvement strengthens the indigenous movement as a whole.
Nosotras no es como tener un poder, las mujeres. Lo que nosotros queremos es que haya una formación y capacitación de las mujeres.
It isn't that as women they're seeking power on their own, she tells me. What they want is training so that they can bolster the movement of which they're a part. With the help of funds from the Canadian International Development Agency, CIDA, a new school has been built to train women in political and organizational processes. This will add to the work of their educators, who already visit each community. Luzmila Campo is invited to the front of the hall as a guest of honor. Twice governor of her community of Munchique de los Tigres, Luzmila is now a councillor for the municipality of Santander de Quilichao. Luzmila understands the challenges that their communities face. Men and women must work together, she says. Unity is the most important. It's essential for their survival. The Nassau people have been struggling for over 3 decades to have their ancestral lands returned to them, for which they've paid a high price. Their youth and leaders are frequently targeted by guerrilla, paramilitary, and state forces, all active within their territory. Luzmila has had several direct confrontations with armed groups.
Mire, nosotros cuando yo fui gobernadora atravesé una época tan difícil, muy difícil.
When she was governor, she recalls, a young person from the community was abducted by an armed group. Luzmila was amongst those that dealt with the abduction. They rescued the youth, brought him back home, and performed a ritual so that he would feel part of the community again. The Nassau also maintain unity through community work. Prior to the inauguration, a makeshift kitchen is arranged over an open fire, while others arrange the hall. A large group of women, men, and youth shuck the large pile of corn for the stew. The enormous soup pot measures no less than 6 feet in diameter and 3 feet in depth. During the ceremony, a group of youth present 2 traditional dances. The indigenous organization in northern Cauca pays special attention to youth, teaching them about their culture, their language, and their organization. At the age of 14, youth can vote and be elected. It's a time at which many are often lured into the drug trade or even starting families. Berta Campo Leitamo is current secretary of the youth movement.
Cuando lleva muy poco en como a los 15 años ya muy poquito tiempo de haber entrado al movimiento juvenil.
She was only 15 when first elected to her community council 4 years ago. Her community was just creating their development plan at the time. She had to research all aspects of family matters while going to school at the same time.
Aquí perdí mi timidez porque yo
Berta has learned a lot. She's gotten over her shyness, she tells me, learning to be critical and constructive. She's also looking forward to taking on greater leadership responsibilities in her community. In November, Berta's community sent her to the World Forum 2006 in Vancouver, hosted by the British Columbia Ministry of Children and Family Development, in collaboration with other child welfare organizations in Western Canada. There, Berta met other youth and discovered how different her life is from the lives of many young Canadians who don't have to fight for their basic rights and survival the way she and her peers do.
A continuación les vamos a dar también los nombres de cómo quedó conformada la nueva junta directiva para este año 2007-2008.
Santander de Quilichao's 13 new councillors line up across the community hall, ready to receive their ceremonial staffs from the outgoing council. The staff, a carved piece of wood about 2 feet long, painted and decorated with ribbons, is the Nassau people's symbol of authority. It's also the only physical tool that they use to confront conflict and to defend their ancestral territorial rights. The new governor has handed her staff. She's encouraged to continue walking in their teachings, to strengthen their unity and their culture, working toward autonomy for their people. As the last Nassau councillor receives their staff, the new council stands side by side across the hall, the sun shining on their backs with their staffs held high. Women and men together, ranging widely in age, receive the generous support of a roomful of people anxious to start eating and dancing. As the music starts, the little girl in the peach dress is the first one on the floor. But within a short time, many others have joined her, and the party will carry on well past the time she's fallen asleep. In spite of the many challenges that the Nassau people of Northern Kauka face, it's evident that their valued sense of community provides them with great strength. For the Green Planet Monitor, I'm Jennifer Moore in Santander de Quilichao, Northern Kauka Province, Colombia.
For more information about the Kauka Indian people of Southwest Colombia, go to our webpage at www.earthchronicles.net, click on the Green Planet Monitor link, and find the show notes for edition number 16. We'll repeat that address at the end of the show.
In the course of past Green Planet Monitor editions, we've been listening back to proceedings of last June's Fourth World Urban Forum in Vancouver. Here's another voice we captured there for Monitoring Post.
From the many stories that we had, it is very, very clear that if, and I think everybody said that, is that if we are serious about achieving any goal, the solution lies in what grassroots women are doing. And I think we had many, each of them said that we know the problems, we understand our own situation, and we understand how we can solve the problem, we can bring the problems to NED. We do have the solutions. And it always pains me because often when our governments and when even institutions define programs. A lot of time these programs are designed in the boardrooms. And they are designed in conferences, in big hotels. And then those programs are taken on the ground to be implemented. And then the communities are forced to fit within those programs. And we keep hearing donor agencies, we keep hearing development agencies, we keep hearing our governments telling us, if you have something that you want to fit within this program, we are coming to your town and we hope you have something so that we can fit in. And I think this is the message where the communities are telling us that enough is enough. First of all, look at what we have, and then we will tell you where to put the money so that you can scale up, so that we can achieve all the goals. And I just want to say something. We We are big in trying, and we really try hard to dialogue with the international agencies at this conference. And it's, and I think we feel so honored to see people like Lisa, Shri, and many of you sitting to listen to us. And we keep asking, can you ask many of you to sit on a table with us? Because we can talk to you. It is okay, we are talking to a number of you. We are telling you what we should do. But you are just a few of the many that are actually making those global policies. We are asking, can we have a conversation with adequate number of you? And I think I want to come back to Shri's point, of, because in 2003 we had a community dialogue with the Global Fund on AIDS during ICASA's and international meeting, and saying this is how we have put we have fought AIDS. It's a question of asking grassroots women, how much have you put on the table? And a lot of times, and I like what Shri has said, we have actually found from our assessment, grassroots women are putting much more money than World Bank, than Global Fund on AIDS to fight HIV and AIDS. And they must be on the lead to decide how we are going to address the pandemic. And I think it is now, it is not tomorrow, it's now.
Salvador's brutal 12-year civil war ended for good in 1992, post-conflict tourism was the last thing on people's minds. Now, in the valley beneath Guazapo volcano, where rebel FMLN forces used to hide out, young people are preparing to take paying tourists to the scenes of massacres and armed engagements, and to beautiful rainforests where exotic birds sing. GPM producer Jana Graham explains.
This city's name means the land of birds and flowers. And Suchitoto, El Salvador, looks like a picture-perfect town. With its clean, cobbled streets, artist studios, cafes, and small inns, this little town is a cultural oasis, only an hour away from the chaotic streets of San Salvador, the capital. Suchitoto lies beside Suchetland, a large inland lake, home to an impressive diversity of tropical flowers and birds. Above Suchitoto looms Guazapo, a 4,700-foot volcano. It was here, in the surrounding rainforest villages, that El Salvador's bloody civil war played out during the 1980s. The rebel forces, the FMLN, hid here and launched attacks from Guazapo's rugged slopes. The landscape of Suchitoto has stories to tell. And with the help of a tourism consultant from Quebec, the municipality of Suchitoto is developing a plan for a community-based ecotourism project.
Javier Martinez.
Javier Martinez is the mayor. Javier says that Suchitoto was one of the hardest hit during the armed conflict. In this region, it's estimated that 2,000 lives were lost during the war. 90% of the city was destroyed, including schools and houses. People emigrated to San Salvador, to Switzerland, Costa Rica, the United States, and Canada. Before the war, there were 40,000 inhabitants in the municipality here. After the war, there were only about 6,000. Between 1980 and 1992, civil war ripped through El Salvador. The conflict cost more than 75,000 lives and destroyed entire villages. Javier Martinez is one of the thousands of El Salvadorians who joined rebel forces FMLN. Now, as the mayor of Suchitoto, he's overseeing a plan for sustainable rural tourism to rebuild Suchitoto and to create a viable source of income for local youth. Javier's municipality has been working on a plan for organizing tourism in this region for years. He says that the kind of tourism they're interested in is an integrated, sustainable, community-based tourism. For Javier, sustainable tourism means that it provides income for the local community, but in a way that's responsible to the environment.
Ahora yo creo que dentro de la parte dura de la guerra es muy
This is where Quebecer Robert Gilbert comes in.
My name is Robert Gilbert. I come from Tadoussac.
Although he's a newcomer to Suchitoto, Gilbert has over 20 years of experience in tourism development. He'll be working here for at least 2 years as a cooperant with CUSO, Canadian University Services Overseas. Robert is from Tadoussac, Quebec, one of the world's major whale-watching destinations. His business development and tourism planning skills can help Suchitoto realize their vision of becoming a quality alternative tourism destination here in El Salvador.
The situation here, actually, people are coming here for one day at lunch and then go back. But for international tourism, at least they got one or two. But they have the potential here to receive a lot because they have a lot of hotel infrastructure and there's a lot of potential to like the naturalism and lake and all the historia.
Palo Grande is a village at the base of Guaizapo Volcano, a 10-minute drive from the town of Suchitoto. The heart of Suchitoto's tourism project will be here in Palo Grande. Magdaleno Martinez's house is the first one you come to in Palo Grande. Magdaleno and his wife are an elderly couple, and they're the unofficial gatekeepers of Palo Grande. Everyone stops here, and they're known as Papalino and Mamalino. They happen to be the parents of Javier Martinez, Suchitoto's mayor. I asked Papalino about his vision for tourism
here.
Papalino says that his family are survivors of the armed conflict in El Salvador. He says that they've come back, that they had to leave during the conflict, but they've come back. Papalino says that this place is historic and has beautiful nature and forests. It has rivers that people can swim in, and there are highlands and ranches. He tells me that every place has its story. Not all Papalino's stories are happy. During the war, he tells me, National Army soldiers rounded up 36 women and children, put them in a house, and then set it on fire. The caves and forests of Palo Grande were hiding places for the rebel forces, FMLN. And when tourists come to Palo Grande, they will see these spots and learn about the Salvadoranian Civil War, where it actually unfolded, here in Palo Grande. Papalino says tourism is good for the youth here, because it empowers them to be involved in the local community. Everyone calls him Chicky, and Chicky is a hulking bear of a guy with a kind, boyish smile. When you ask him what he does, he laughs and says he's a cook, an agronomist, a biologist, and a teacher. Eduardo Ibreso will be in charge of youth training.
Grupo de 15 jóvenes como él
Chiqui has been working with 15 young women and men from Palo Grande and three other nearby communities. He's training them to be hiking guides and nature interpreters for the ecotourism project that will be here, literally, in their own backyards. The youth will lead hikes through the rainforest, featuring ecological, historical, and cultural interpretation. They'll create interpretive panels and operate a bakery where visitors can buy fresh bread and natural medicines, and where Palo Grande's many artisans will display and sell their work. Chiqui and I stopped for a chat with Vanacio, a 15-year-old on the Suchitoto tourism team. He shows us a dead snake he found up a trail, and Chiqui explains how these snakes reproduce. He then shows us plant specimens he's collected, and Chiqui talks about their medicinal properties. Vanacio says they are studying the local flora and fauna, learning how to recognize and talk about nature. It's a tourism project, he says, that will benefit the entire community. As we walk, Chiqui tells me that creating a tourism project offers local youth a vision for the future. He says the United States lures many young people away. More and more families here depend on remittances. That's money sent by family members living in the U.S. or Canada. With Suchitoto's ecotourism project in place, young people might have a reason to stay. And that's what makes Quebecer Robert Gilbert happy to be helping.
It's not the individual project. It's community project. And I'm here to help those to organize themselves, to help, to show those how to make a business plan, commercialization, and all this thing. And I'll have to do it, I want to do it with the youth, because all this information is going to help those for all their life. If in 5 years they need to, they want to start another project, they don't need a corporate to do a business plan. They're going to be able to do it by themselves.
Tourism is coming to the municipality of Suchitoto, El Salvador. But it won't be the steamrolled high-rise hotels and zipline tourism so popular with the gringos who flock to Costa Rica. No, Suchitoto is looking for the thoughtful types who tread lightly while experiencing the culture, history, and natural environment of El Salvador. In the municipality of Suchitoto in El Salvador, this is Jana Graham for the Green Planet Monitor.
And that's our show for this week, The Green Planet Monitor. Smart Solutions for a Developing World is produced by Earth Chronicle Productions, Brandon, Manitoba, Canada, with the assistance of CKUW, University of Winnipeg Radio.
Thanks to our sponsors, the Mass Media Initiative of the Canadian International Development Agency and the Social Justice Fund of the Canadian Auto Workers Union. Our executive producer is Dave Kattenberg. Our contributing producers are Michelle Betts, Victoria Fenner, Jana Graham, and Jen Moore.
And drop us a line, will you please? Send your comments and questions to greenplanetmonitor@earthchronicles.net.
And here's our web address again, where you can find more information about today's edition and subscribe to GPM podcasts. Go to www.earthchronicles.net and click on the GPM link. For the Green Planet Monitor, I'm Robin Erickson.
And I'm Rob Schmidt. Bye for now.